In several of the previous How Do I videos on ASP.NET authentication, we've looked at how to manually, programmatically authenticate a user. But starting in this video, we're going to start to look at using some of the built-in providers that are available to ASP.NET developers, in this case, for membership. So to get started, I have Visual Web Developer up and running, and I have an empty project created here, empty in that it doesn't have any ASP.NET pages defined yet. We do have a master page defined that uses this style sheet. So I'm going to add a default.aspx page. I'll select Add a New Item, choose Web Form, make sure that Select Master Page is checked, click Add. Then Visual Studio gives us the dialog to choose the master page that we want to use. There's only one defined in this project, so I'm going to use that one. Notice that we pick up the look and feel from our master page, but in our case, I'm just going to cut and paste some static HTML content here. So no real magic here, no code, no controls, just static, some paragraphs and some headers. And this gives us this basic default.aspx page, which is basically what we've been using for these authentication videos. If we hop into the web.config file, we'll see that we have a standard auto-generated web.config file as generated by Visual Web Developer Express. Nothing special in here. If we scroll down, we'll note that authentication mode is the Visual Studio default of Windows. And we're going to go ahead and set up a default membership repository. So to do that, I'm going to select Website, choose ASP.NET Configuration. This is going to fire up a web page that will allow us to do authentication. Now notice, current username is Joe Stagner -PC, which is my machine name, Joe Stagner, which is my my username on this machine. And that's because the default for this application that we're administering is Windows authentication, so it's picking up my machine authentication. However, if we go into security, click on either this link or this security tab here. Notice it says the current authentication type is Windows. But if we click on Select Authentication Type, and notice there are two choices here, from the internet, from a local network. From a local network means you're going to use built-in Microsoft Windows authentication. From the internet means we're going to use forms authentication. So we're going to select from the internet, and then click on the Done button down in the right-hand corner. And now note we can create existing users. So let's go ahead and do a couple of things. So we can enable roles or disable roles. We're not going to use roles for the purposes of this demo. For this demo, we're just going to work with users. So let's say create a user, and I'm going to create a user for myself. And I'm going to use a password, but I'll warn you that I'm going to enter a password that's invalid. And I'll explain what invalid means here in a minute. And then I'll enter a username. Notice it has this security question and security answer. In a little bit, I'll demonstrate where that requirement is coming from, why this is displayed by default. So let's see. Favorite color will be my question, and black will be my answer. And notice this checkbox here that allows us to choose whether or not this user is active. This can be important because you might want to create users by default that are inactive and then require some action on the part of the user, like they have to reply to an email, for example, to confirm that they've entered a valid email address. In our case, we'll just leave it selected as active user and click on Create. Now notice it gives me an error. Password length minimum is 7 characters. I entered less than 7. Non-alphanumeric characters required is 1. So this is telling me that I needed at least 1 alphanumeric character, and I didn't do that. So now I'll enter a strong password that will use upper and lowercase letters, a total length of 7, and both alphanumeric and non-alphanumeric characters. So now when I go ahead and say create user, we should be okay. Right. Now if we go back home, notice it says existing users is 1. If I go into security, I can choose manage users. And there's some wildcard navigation here, but since there's only 1 user, I can choose to edit users, or delete the user completely, or edit roles. And we'll get to using roles in a subsequent How Do I video. So if we hop over into Visual Studio, back into Visual Studio, there are a couple of interesting things that have taken place here. The first is, notice that Visual Web Developer is telling us that the web.config file has changed outside the source editor. Would you like to reload it? I'm going to say yes, and then you'll notice that the authentication type, which was Windows before, has automatically been changed to forms for us. So we're now using forms-based authentication. The other thing, if I go over here and I refresh this folder, you'll notice that an app underscore data directory has been created. And if we expand that, you'll see that there's an ASP.NET DB.MDF file that's been created. This, in fact, is the member repository. And if we switch over into the Database Explorer for this MDF that's been created, in our case, this is a SQL Express database, and I'll show you momentarily why this is a SQL Express database and how that happens. But if we go ahead and look into the Tables section here, let's open Database Explorer up a little bit here. So a couple of interesting things here. If we look at the membership collection, notice here that there's a user ID, password. Notice you no username, right? So user ID, password, password format, password salt. So that will give you a hint that password storage in whichever mechanism that you choose is secure, if in fact you choose to use a secure storage mechanism for passwords. And I'll explain that when we dig into the actual provider definition momentarily. Password question, password answer, etc. So that's the membership information. Also, if we scroll down a little bit here, we can see that there's a users table, and users table maps one-to-one with membership. So if I click on users here, you can see also there's a key user ID, username, right? So this is just the representation of the user, and membership provides the membership information for this particular user. If we go and show the table data for ASP.NET underscore users, you'll see here the one user that we just created for myself. Right, so this is an application ID. One of the interesting things is that you can get very creative about how you use the membership repository. So by default, because of the way this has been created, using a SQL Express database inside this application, the application has a unique ID and the user has a unique ID. But we can use a single membership repository across multiple applications if we want to, and we'll get to look at how we might do that in a little bit. If we also go in and look at the membership data, remember we've only created one user for myself with a username Joe Stagner. Notice that it's there's also a lowercase representation, and this is so that we can do comparisons so that folks can't create two different users with the same name, only differentiated by case. If we look at the data for the membership table, we'll see some similar results. Now notice here application ID, user ID, password. Right, and this is the password's representation. This is the password format, which we'll talk about momentarily. Basically, there are three formats that are available to you. One is clear text, which I personally recommend you never ever use because it just stores the password in clear text in the database, which means that anybody gets access to your database, they have all of the usernames and all of the passwords. Even though in the case of the ASP.NET 2.0's default membership schema, you'll notice that the passwords and the usernames are actually in different tables. Here's the password salt value, which infers that we're using the default security mechanism for password format, which means that we're using a password hash. So the three mechanisms are clear text, which you shouldn't ever use, encrypted, which means that the actual encrypted value is stored in the database table, and that means that given the proper decryption algorithm and the encryption key, that that stored value can be decrypted until the actual password, which allows you to do password recovery if the user forgets their password. The downside to that, of course, is that if the password data and the key, the encryption key for the password data, are compromised, then the attacker can decrypt all of the passwords in the database. The default mechanism, the default password format, is to use a password hash, which means that the actual value is not recoverable. There's just a hash that represents that password stored in the database, and we're using a password salt value to protect that hash. So if all of that doesn't make complete sense to you, that's okay. Understand that it's a secure mechanism, and keep your eye on the ASP.NET website, where subsequent videos will drill down into the details of encryption and hashing, and particularly as they pertain to passwords. So as we go on, notice email value, also lowercase email value, because one of the things that we may want to require is that the user only is allowed to create one account for their username, and we don't want them to be able to differentiate. One account per email address, and we don't want the user to be able to differentiate the email address simply by changing the case of a character. Right, so, question and answer as well. Right, so the question is in clear text here, favorite color, but the answer is a hash as well. So. Pretty secure mechanism by default, and of course you can choose what level of security is appropriate for your application. So we've got this in place now. We can program against it, but the real question is, how does Visual Studio know what it's supposed to do when I say, when I go to website administer? So what actually happens by default is, let's close this out, and I'm going to go and navigate to my Windows directory, and we're going to find the .NET framework folder, choose framework, version, we're looking for version 2.0, and then we're going to look inside config, and let's look here for the machine.config file. So here's machine.config file. Let's go ahead and open this up in an editor. Now, I'm not actually going to make any changes here in the machine.config file. You want to be very careful when you do that, because if you make an incorrect change in the machine.config file, then basically you won't be able to create any new applications, and lots of existing applications will no longer work, because you've introduced an error, right? So there's a hierarchy by which web.config inherits from machine.config. The things we want to note here first is this connection string, right? So and actually, I'm going to create a separate file, because we're going to save these off a little bit. So here's this connection string, and let's just define this as an XML file so we get syntax highlighting. This is Context. It's a free programmer's editor. If you just search Context Editor, you'll find it out there. So you'll notice the name, Local SQL Server, and this is the default connection for databases. So because it's the default, this is the one that Visual Studio or Visual Web Developer is going to use to set up our membership provider. So we have a connection string. We're saying that data source is by default SQL Express, and integrated security, and we're attaching the DB file name. Whatever the application's data directory is, which in our case is app_data, that's the default for Visual Studio, ASP.NET db.mdf, and this is a user instance, right? And it's because of this connection string being the default in the machine.config file that when we go into website ASP.NET configuration and choose authentication from the internet, that we get the ASP.NET db.mdf file created by Visual Studio in our app_data folder. Now, this will only work if you have SQL Express installed. So this connection string is the default, but if you don't have SQL Express installed, it won't work. Next. Let's look further in the machine.config file, and if we scroll down a little bit further, you'll note there are three inside system web. There are three providers here that are of interest to us. There's a membership provider, a profile provider, and a role provider. Let's cut and paste these out. All right. Now that I've done that, I'm going to just close the machine.config file because, as I said, you want to be very careful when you're playing around with the machine.config file. All right. So here, let's look at some of the details that are available for a membership provider. Now, these are inherited from the machine.config file. If you want to program them specifically, you can cut and paste these entries, any one of these entries, any collection of these entries, into your web.config file, and they'll be picked up from the web.config file. So if you want to do something different than the machine default, you can do that in the web.config file. And of course, when you go into ASP.NET configuration, if you go into things like provider configuration, this is where you can actually say, I want to set up different providers for different features. There's a manual way to do it, although the real granular control is to be found by editing the web.config file. So let's look at here with the membership provider what some of the detailed options are that are available. Right. So this is the assembly, of course, the version for the SQL membership provider. Notice connection string, local SQL server. Now, in the next video, I'm going to show you how to add a membership database to any SQL server instance. I'm not going to do that in this video. I'm going to do that in the next video. But suffice to say that what this connection string name does is tell the provider, ASP.NET SQL membership provider, and that's the one that we're going to work with. You can use an XML provider, an Oracle provider, a custom provider that, that you've written. Microsoft ships in the box SQL, the SQL membership provider, Active Directory membership provider. There's also one for Microsoft Access databases floating around out there, although I don't necessarily suggest you use that unless you're certain that the load demand on your application won't exceed the capabilities of an Access database. So this is where we say, here's the database that the membership data, the users and passwords and such, will be found in. And the nice thing about this is that means that you can have one membership provider for multiple applications, or you can have a SQL Server database that lives in your web farm someplace, and you can have all of the different applications on all of the different servers all pointing to the same membership repository, but you can use different profile repositories if you choose to, or different roles. So each application can have a different set of profiles and a different set of roles, but you can have a single authentication database. And in fact, we do that in our web properties for ASP.NET and SilverLight.net, etc. Next, enable password retrieval. Right, so this says, do you want the user to be able to retrieve the password? They've lost their password. Now, in the case of the default database that I just showed you, we're not actually storing the password in the database. We're using the mechanism for storing a password hash. So enable password retrieval has to be false because what's stored in the database is just a hash and not the actual encrypted password. If we had stored the encrypted password, or we were storing the clear text password, which I do recommend against, then we could set that equal to true, and the user would be able to say, hey, just email me the password, I can't remember it. Enable password reset equals true. This option allows you to let the user say, hey, I forgot my password, auto-generate a password and send it to me, and I'll use that to log in and then change it to something I can remember. Next option is require question and answer. So remember, in the default user interface, I was required to provide a password question and answer, and I had to do that because question and answer is set to equal to true. If it's true, you won't be allowed to store the record in the database without them. Good idea if you want to allow users to auto-generate a password, or if you're going to store an encrypted password and allow them to retrieve it. Application name is just the root of this application, so because it's a local SQL Express database. Requires unique email address. By default, it's set to equal to false, which means that I can use one email address and create multiple accounts. But in most public-facing applications, you probably want to set that equal to true so that you can really track a particular user, make sure that one person, one guy or gal, using a single email address can only have one identity. Password format. There's a typo that demonstrates why you don't want to do this sort of playing around actually in your machine.config file. Password format equal hashed. Right? Again, it could be encrypted or it could be clear. invalid password attempts is 5. So basically what this says is that if I try 5 times to enter a my username and password and I fail all 5 times, then the account's going to be locked. And you want to do this for 2 reasons. One is you want to prevent denial of service attacks against your application where somebody's just firing thousands and thousands of invalid authentication requests that look up in the database. The other thing, of course, is you want to prevent users from falling victim to brute force attacks or dictionary attacks where somebody that knows the username just tries a whole collection of possible password values, whether they're created algorithmically in a real brute force attack or whether they use common passwords from a dictionary to just keep trying until they stumble across correct passwords. So with this set to 5, after 5 attempts you get locked out and the user will have to take proactive action to get their password reset. Minimum required password length. Remember when I first started entering a password, I entered only 5 characters and that wasn't enough. This is the reason that wasn't enough, so if you want to set it to more or less depending on the security needs of your application, this is where you would do that. Minimum required non-alphanumeric characters is 1. So remember, another message that we got when I entered that 5-character simple password was that we needed a non-alphanumeric character. We could set that equal to 3 if we want to be, you know, a little bit more clever. But requiring 1 really ups the resilience against brute force attacks. Password attempt window is 10 seconds. It's the interval in between how unsuccessful attempts will be calculated. And we could, if we wanted to, provide a regular expression that would have to be satisfied in order for the password to be accepted. And by default, we're not using one, but it can be a good idea if you want to impose, for example, that a password has to have an uppercase and a lowercase and a digit as well as a non-numeric character, for example. You might want to do that. So those are the configuration options that are available for the ASP.NET SQL membership provider and how to get started with using it. So now notice we haven't used any of the membership controls. We haven't done authentication. This is just how you get started with the database and how you get a little bit of understanding about the database. In the next videos in this series, we'll move into how you use the controls that go against this database, how you configure any old SQL Server instance that's out there to be the one that you want to choose. So hopefully this video gets you a basic understanding of what the setup is for using the built-in ASP.NET 2.0 membership database. And in the follow-on videos, we'll actually start to be able to configure it the way that we want, choose to put the database and its data where we want, and then program against it both manually in code as well as using the controls to go against it in the way that's most effective for our application. Thank you.